Welcome back to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. School is back in session across our region, and as kids and teachers dig in for the year ahead, there are some big issues that school systems are grappling with behind the scenes. In just a bit, we'll learn how Maryland's poorest county is dealing with the growing issue of hunger and poverty amongst its students. We'll talk about a new program that will provide free school breakfast and lunches to all of its public school students. But first, we'll bring you a story about a national debate that is impacting a local school district. It has to do with the influx of tens of thousands of Central American children coming across the U.S.-Mexico border in recent months. These children have traveled to communities across the United States, including some here in our region. Back in July, 117 of these unaccompanied youths were placed with families in Delaware. And shortly thereafter, officials with the Indian River School District in Selbyville said they were worried about the number of newly arrived children who might be enrolling for the fall. They were concerned with how they would cover the cost of educating these children. So earlier this week, I caught up with the district superintendent, Susan Bunting. She told me the real challenges for the school system regarding this issue lie in handling a very substantial demographic change.
We actually have been seeing a change in our demographics for the last two decades. And more recently, we've had a steadily increasing Hispanic population in our district. Because there's no way to actually find out from a registration form who's coming from who's coming in undocumented, we can't tell you exact numbers. But last school year, we began to notice, particularly at the high school level, an unusual number of high schoolers coming. And it turns out that the 70 or so that we saw coming to Sussex Central High School, the youth that did not speak any English, seemed to be the influx of the Central American students that we are actually going to get. So our board's concern was actually about 6 months in arrears. Mm-hmm. We have been planning for the students. We have, as I said, steadily been seeing increases in our Hispanic population. Some of our schools in the northern part of the district have as many as 85-90% of their students, particularly kindergarten level, coming through from the Hispanic population. Many of our students do speak English because they were born here. Many others are coming to us as young students, and we can assimilate them into classes, kindergarten classes, and then they move right on through. We do have a four-year-old program called Project Village that very quickly helps a four-year-old acclimate to the school setting, get all the preschool experiences that they need so that they come to kindergarten with all the language and math skills that they would need to be operating on an equal playing field with their English-speaking counterparts. So it depends on the age. And the difference mm-hmm. last year was that we saw this influx of high schoolers. Mm-hmm. Knowing that, and knowing that we have in many of our schools in the northern half of the district, ESOL teachers, or ELL teachers is how we refer to them, we've been planning for and educating these students all along. This year we do have a program that's a voluntary program. We don't have space in the north, so we have some extra space in the old Frankfort Elementary building, which we call the Carver Building. Mm-hmm. And we have set up two classrooms there for a newcomers program for a high schooler who speaks absolutely not a word of English, doesn't know how to write or read in English. Sometimes they don't know how to read in their native language either. Right. But we have a provision for them. If the parent chooses to have the child participate in the newcomer program, then we would be able to accommodate a number of students there, and they can earn some high school credits. We've also started an 18 to 21-year-old program through our adult ed program that would enable that student to stay in our system and actually accumulate high school credits and earn a diploma. It may be a few years later than our other students who spoke English when they came to us, but it would be a wonderful opportunity for that student who has come to America speaking not a word of English to actually have an American high school diploma within 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Let's paint a picture for people of what the Indian River School District was like, you know, 20 years ago, and how that's changed, whether it's in demographics or ethnicity or even socioeconomic standing. Because, you know, what people read is that now Indian River is, you know, enrolls the largest number of Hispanic students in the state.
First of all, the Indian River School District is a very large district. Mm-hmm. We have 365 square miles that we cover. So geographically, we're the largest district in the state, with the exception of the VOTEC districts, which are county districts. When I came to central office in 1991 and did the federal grants, for example, our poverty rate was about 35%. Our poverty rate now is closer to 65%. And that's through a variety of changes. The economic downswing and so forth has really influenced our students. When I came to central office in 91, fewer than 1% of our students were Hispanic. And we're now looking probably this year at about 28%. We were at 27 point something last year. That has been a gradual shift, about 1% every year. More recently, it possibly is a 2% increase per year. We're going to be up by about 400 students between last September 30th and this September 30th overall. A portion of those will be Hispanic. Our numbers will go up, but not all of them. We just seem to be an area where people are moving to. It's great, a great place to live. The people are wonderful. School system is good. We're drawing a lot of school choice students in as well. So it's a variety of things that have influenced those numbers.
As we talked earlier in the conversation about that worry and concern coming from the Board of Ed about what might happen with the number of Central American students coming across the border into the United States, into Delaware, you know, do you think that that was sort of a knee-jerk reaction and a fear, you know, now that you look at the actual numbers of kids that are coming in, whether or not you can tell if they're undocumented or whether they're just moving here?
I think it was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction, though there's always that concern about how are we going to provide the best that we can to assure that all of our students are successful.
Sure.
And we do want to make that a top priority for us. It's the way school districts are rated. We want to provide the best educational opportunities, the best health opportunities, the best athletic opportunities, put that all into a grand package. One of the major concerns was that we would be receiving students who might not be inoculated and bring other factors to bear, and that would have repercussions in the district. Yeah. I have worked, since that board meeting particularly, very closely with the governor's office, with Senator Carper's office. We have a very close affiliation with Senator Carper's office. Kara McGrath here in Sussex County has been working with us. One thing that we've learned is that part of what the Health and Human Service Agency has to do as they come across the border is to keep them for approximately a month. And definitely they receive every inoculation that they would need. So these students are coming to us disease-free or under control. We do have to do annually a screening of all of our students in the district, and we will find that some of our students don't have the appropriate inoculations. They're the students who have already been here mm-hmm. or have been in our communities and perhaps haven't had early pediatric care. So we will do a cleanup of that after we get all the students in. And then by the middle of October, that will be the deadline for you receive a letter. If you don't have certain inoculations, then by the another 14 days, you won't be able to attend class. But that is not a concern that should be affiliated with the students that are coming across the border.
Is there no conversation between the folks who are handling these students before they come here and who are helping to inoculate them and make sure they're vaccinated and make sure, you know, they're socially sort of, you know, rolled into it a little bit? I think there might be some question about the conversations that's going on between the governmental entities that are handling them and sending them here and you who are dealing with them.
There was no formal announcement that we were going to be seeing this influx of students, for example, last spring.
Right.
And they didn't all come in one month or
it wasn't
one day.
In a bus, you know?
That is correct. It didn't pull up to the front door. We've seen that natural growth, and it was our high school principal who last year came to us and said, you know, we've had this unusual number of high schoolers arrive, and we hadn't seen an influx of high schoolers before, so that made it different. It has only been in the last couple of months that we've had any kind of communication from government officials. Mm-hmm. And so they are assuring us that they feel the students we've already seen come are the ones that are going to be coming. We won't be seeing another influx, right, that we've already worked with those. And we, through the years, have been adding ELL teachers to our population. We know that that's the way we need to address our students' needs. So that has been a natural evolution here, mm-hmm, in the district, and we will continue to identify students who need additional assistance. Sure. As we do any kind of assistance, we want to provide for our students' needs.
But in many cases, the needs of unaccompanied youths who have just recently arrived in this country can be drastically different from even the students who just speak English as a second language. Many of these unaccompanied kids endured great trauma just to get here. Some have been out of school for an extended period of time. Many have endured great poverty and survived dangerous and often violent situations. And now they have to adjust to a new school, a new culture, and of course, a new language. To help kids through this transition are people like Dr. Luann Hudson. She's the Director of Curriculum and Instruction at Indian River. She oversees the district's ELL, or English Language Learners, program.
The needs are very different across grade levels and between the different type of immigrant families that we have coming to our district. So in the case of some of the unaccompanied minors or that have been coming to Delaware, and in particular to Indian River School District, they often do have different needs. Some of them, you know, have trauma in their background or major interruptions in education. So to address all of their needs, we have to address the whole child. So we have definitely over the past several months worked very hard to add additional programs to what we already offer for ELL to really specify for those children an education that is really going to meet their needs at a very basic level, not just for learning language, but for learning, period. Mm-hmm. So we have developed some specialized programs in order to meet their needs.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a tiered approach between not only teaching, but also almost counseling to a certain extent, too, you know, based on how these kids got here and what they went through just to get here. And then, of course, there's the situation of trying to be acclimated into a new school with new kids and a whole new language. Talk about the challenges that kids on an elementary level face when English is not their first language versus kids in high school. I mean, the general belief is that the earlier they start, the easier it is for them. Does that hold true here?
Yes, it does definitely hold true. When we get early childhood language learners, all children are learning to read at that age. So whether you're learning to read Spanish or English or a combination of the two in, you know, immersion programs or bilingual programs, it's not so different for, mm-hmm, those students than their American English-speaking counterparts. But as you grow older and the shift takes place from learning how to read to learning through reading, perhaps you're using text to learn about social studies or science or mathematics or whatever the case may be, the shift is different because now you not only have the language issue, reading, writing, listening, and speaking English, you have the other layer of the content knowledge. How much content knowledge are they coming to you with, and how are we going to make the content knowledge accessible to those students when they don't read, write, or speak English? So you have a couple of different learning issues going on. So you want to accelerate their language acquisition so that you can get to the core content.
How much of the ELL students' day is integrated in with some of their American counterparts versus the portion of their day where they're with their other Central American or Hispanic students where they're working on English and they're working on the culture and they're working on reading and listening and writing and all of those things? Is it half and half? Is it 60-40? Where do you find the balance, I guess, is the real question.
The balance depends on the need. So I would say in most cases, for most all of our ELL students, most of their day is integrated. with supports in the regular classrooms, except for their reading or their ELL class, where they're really specifically working on language acquisition. Mm-hmm. So most of their day is all integrated, which poses challenges for students at each, you know, at each different level, depending on, again, where their level of learning already is. Now, we have developed a new program this year in which the newcomer program, which these students will be immersed in English language classes at almost 100%. It's in a different location. We're out of space in many of our schools, as you probably already know. So we have a building initiative right now where we are adding on classrooms to almost all of our schools mm-hmm. in the north end of the district. But we're out of space. So for the high school students in that highest tier of need who are coming with educational interruptions, all of the issues we see them coming with and really having a lot of difficulty accessing the curriculum, what we have done is provide a new program which puts them on a fast track for language acquisition, immerses them into the language acquisition classes, and then transitions them back to the high school when they're ready to take high school 4-credit courses. Mm-hmm.
What has been the biggest challenge for these unaccompanied minors? Is it more the language barrier or dealing with the trauma, or is it just integrating in socially with our new classmates?
In getting started with this, I think what we see in school most often is that they're not used to being in school, or they haven't had a lot of years of formal schooling. So just knowing the norms of what school is all about and how you make it in a classroom. Mm-hmm. What is appropriate is, you know, when do I raise my hand? What do I raise my hand for? Those types of things are pretty unknown to many of the students that we've been entering into the high school, which was why we developed the new program, helping them succeed from day one with some of the most basic information that most students come to school with, mm-hmm. Because they've been in, especially high school age students, they've been in school for, you know, several years. Other than that, I think that we probably don't know these students well enough yet to know what kind of emotional difficulties they may be coming with. But, you know, we are prepared. We do have, you know, bilingual psychologists and other support staff that work with the district that will be on hand when and if necessary to help them overcome whatever challenges they come to us with.
As you look at the demographic shift and the growth of the Hispanic population in this county over the past 20 years, where do you see this program in let's say 5 years?
Who knows if it's going to get bigger? That's a pretty big unknown for our entire country right now. We don't really know who's going to come to our doors, but as educators and public schools, we're gonna do our best to educate every child that walks through the door, no matter what kind of needs they come to us with and what kind of needs they present. I think, you know, children first and foremost.
That was Lou Ann Hudson, the Director of Curriculum and Instruction at Indian River School District in Delaware. We also heard from Susan Bunting, the district's superintendent. To learn more, click to our website, wamucoast.org. You're listening to Coastal Connection here on 88.3 in Ocean City and 88.5 in Washington. I'm Brian Russo. We'll be right back.